You just wasted on something anyway.
Well, Renee, we'd like to welcome you to the school board meeting. Thank you for coming and welcome everybody else. We're ready to begin. It's 3 o'clock and today is Wednesday, September 10th, 2025. We are meeting at the Sevier School District office. So those in attendance are board members Rick Orr, Jill Porter, Vice President Ryan Savage, Jack Hansen, and myself, John Foster.
And Stingy.
And from the administration, Assistant Superintendent Mike Willis, Business Administrator Ken Lorenzas, excused today. Executive Secretary Kristen Nielsen. We'll begin with our preliminary, and we've asked Richard Orr to do that for us.
Our father has, our heads before the administrator, we wish to thank you for the opportunity we have to meet together as a school board. And we would ask that thy spirit would abide with us, that the decisions we are called to make on to make, that we may do it with clear minds and clear hearts. We do the things that are right for the children in this district. We're so thankful for this community that we live in, and we ask thee to bless it, that people will remain kind and thoughtful towards one another. We ask that as we go through the meeting, that if we have questions or discussions, that we may do so with kindness and forethought toward one another. Now, may thy spirit be with us as we go throughout this meeting and as we go home. And no harbor accident may befall us. We ask these things in the name of Jesus Christ. Amen.
Amen.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America, and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
To begin with, we'll take a look at our consent agenda. Anyone have any discussion or any questions about anything that's on the consent agenda today?
The only question I have is the mindset adoption, and that's part of what we're talking about here, right?
Yeah. So the I've been talking briefly about it before. The second item where we allow for public comment on the mindset adoption.
Okay.
So we've enhanced and improved our policy on curriculum adoption. The legislature has passed a new law that required more details as far as adopting curriculum, and so our policy was updated, it seems like back in February, I want to say it was last year, or early last school year, and so this is a curriculum specific to, this particular adoption is a curriculum specific to grades 6 through 12, so middle school and high school, and in our policy it's very specific that we bring together a committee including teachers, school leaders, district leaders, parents. We sent out a request for proposal to various companies of what we were looking for to fill this curriculum. And really, it's a focus on the growth mindset. It's a focus. We take 20 minutes district-wide, 20 minutes once a week, and we talk about mindsets. We do this kindergarten through 12th grade. Our prior curriculum was good. It's been in place for several years, but our secondary teachers and principals were requesting something different. We wanted to try to take a step even further as far as just good citizenship, wellness. As you dive into this particular, so that committee met, they reviewed several curricula, different companies, different programs that are designed to meet that need, basically 20 minutes once a week. And this seven mindsets rose to the top, and it's based on, like I said, these seven mindsets. The first one's everything is possible. Talks about dream big, embrace creativity, think positively, act and adjust, and then focus on strengths. Like a lot of it is a growth mindset mentality. So these are just lessons that are good for every student. We've always believed that unless a student is regulated and in a good state of mind, they're going to have a really hard time learning reading, writing, and math. There's nothing in here that promotes the woke mentality or anything like that. It was really good to have parent representation as well as teachers. And we're still in the process of vetting this program, and that's part of this process is allowing public comment twice. So we'll allow comment today. Any parent that wants to review the full curriculum is invited to come in. We have Shyla Anderson with us. She oversees these programs for us. And she has access to the entire curriculum. So if a parent wanted to view every part, they can make a comment through. There are several on their website. You can kind of get a feel for what this is doing. And honestly, we've been doing this now for probably 4 or 5 years in every school where we're just taking 20 minutes once a week to make sure everyone is well, that they're, like it talks about stretching yourself, having an attitude of gratitude, being accountable for your behavior and your actions, lifelong learning and growth, stretching yourself.
When they take this 20 minutes, do they do it in groups that are already formed?
So this is in we historically call advisory groups in secondary. So at the high schools, they're meeting 20 minutes a day every day, working through. They're also using it for what they call cat time, wolf time, round time, where we have students, it's used in different ways where the groups are gathered. I don't know that they need, do they need advisory every day?
was originally set up, Mondays for 20 minutes?
Yeah, and Mondays every 20 minutes specific to this, so it's every week. Middle schools sometimes do it a little bit different, where they'll attach it on to their first period.
First math period.
Their first period will be 20 minutes longer, and then that teacher teaches it. But they're with the same group of kids every single week, their same age group. So then the lessons can progress, and they won't they won't get a lesson twice in a year. Or
they divvied it out amongst the teachers, so every teacher has an equal size group that they work with. So
it's like they're in high schools, they're advisory groups. But it's one thing that's nice about having a curriculum is it's not adding the teacher's plates. It's ready-made. It has little motivational videos embedded. The lesson is very simple to facilitate, so it's not extra work for planning for teachers.
I noticed the last line on what we read here. It says it's measurable. Does that mean there's going to be some kind of a test that goes along with this, or
no?
Don't need to worry about that.
No, there's not anything like that. But we want to be, as we've gone along this path over the last 4 or 5 years, we want to be consistent. We want to ensure that every student is getting this because it's something that's going to make them all better. It's been a journey because we've had all sorts of different ways of implementing it, and we still want to allow that autonomy in the schools. We've had some pushback from teachers because it's another thing. It's more. But now we're starting to see. I met with the president of our local teachers association yesterday, and I was asking him about it. He says, "Oh, this will be good to have more curriculum, more support." But most, according to him, his field that he has with the teacher association, the teachers are enjoying this. They're benefiting from it themselves. It's good discussion. It's really just taking 20 minutes to facilitate basic growth mindset strategies and skills. And it aligns really, really well with our dignity index. How to appropriately debate and disagree and take a stance and still So there has been some controversy surrounding this type of curriculum throughout the state. When I'm up at the legislature talking to legislators and legislative leadership, they get concerned. They say, "Hey, you guys just need to be teaching reading, writing, arithmetic." And I'm like, "Yeah, we would love to do that." But we have higher and higher percentages of students that need to continue to learn digital citizenship, basic growth mindset philosophies, how to appropriately debate. There's no religion in here. There's nothing in here that we've found that we wouldn't want every citizen to be able to learn. But a lot of it comes down to ensuring that students are regulated and in a good state of mind so they can successfully learn reading, writing, math, science, social studies, all together, important aspects. And we're finding success. Honestly, it's paying off. It's one of many things that we're doing to stabilize mental health and wellness without becoming psychologists or getting into the controversial topics. That's one of the things the committee liked about this curriculum, was it's simple, it's growth mindset, and it's good. It's good for every student. Unfortunately, some of these values and skills, they're just not getting taught. Kids aren't coming to school with them, so we're having to be a little more strategic in ensuring that we have those discussions.
Well, and I got what you guys have got there. It doesn't really go into great detail and depth, but I mean, what you see is good.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, I just wanted to make sure.
We're vetting it very closely. We did have parent representation. It's like any of our courses, parents can sign kids out of or pick kids up, but there's just nothing there. We had a lot of controversy as we've adopted different curriculum over the years. Remember when the various curriculums have changed, I've read those and met with parents and said, "Hey, here's your highlighter, here's your copy of the curriculum. If you highlight anything you're concerned with, we'll address it." Kind of the same thing here. We're more than happy to look into any component. And we're just finding it, the research schools across the country, 20 minutes once a week has been very beneficial. Without getting into their own curriculum or the woke curriculum or anything like that, just basic communication skills, resiliency, those types of good things like you see.
And I liked what I saw.
Yeah. And we have the full curriculum available to us for review if anyone wants to review it.
Is this supplementing or replacing the NOVA program?
No, NOVA's still in place, and the law enforcement, our school resource officers actually teach NOVA. So that's a separate component. There's some similarities. It's only taught in certain grade levels. This is something that we're trying. And again, this curriculum is 6 through 12. But we're trying to guarantee that every single student has access to this because we see it as a safety net for wellness, for students being stable and ready to learn. Like I said, there's some controversy out there in the politics of this, but we have not found anything here that goes that way. This is a good curriculum.
Thank you.
Any other questions or anything you wanted to add, Shyla? And Mike, anything you want to add?
I think that as far as the seven mindsets itself, so Red Hills Middle School has used it for a number of years. When Selena Terry was there, she kind of started it over there, and it was really well perceived there. Other schools were using a different program, and so this one it's been tried in our district. It's not something new. It's just something new that we're adopting for everybody. So I think it's going to fit really well. And it, like I said, it's not something new to our district in certain pockets, but overall I think it'll be where they're kind of burned out on the other one, the secondary schools, I think they'll really take this one overall. So it'll be a good fit for our district.
Good. Thank you.
These are all great questions, and we want to ensure that our community is supportive and understands that we're fully transparent. Remember the word we talked about last month, the full transparency on our website and those types of things. If there's concerns, we're happy to share. Open up the curriculum, and if there's anything in there that needs to be addressed, we'll address it. So I think it's really a good thing.
Any other comments or discussion about anything on the consent agenda? If not, then I would entertain a motion that we accept the consent agenda.
I'll make that motion.
Seconded.
Been moved and seconded. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries. Do we have any need to spend any more time on the public comment on the 7-1 sets? If not, we'll just proceed on to the highlight of the program today. We'll turn some time over to Renee Dalton, talk about the food services.
While she's coming up, I just wanted to say how excited we are to have Renee. She's fantastic.
Thank you.
We're off to a great start, and we've been very, very fortunate in our hiring this hiring season. So she's been awesome.
Thank you. I'd just like to thank all of you for having me today. I just thought I'd take a minute to introduce myself. My name's Renee Dalton. I actually grew up here. I was a Carol back in the day. If any of you knew my family. But I'm super honored and humbled to have gotten this job. I know people think it's weird, but I love child nutrition and the kids that I've been able to serve. I come to this job with 18 years of experience, and I'm still going. So I've been here, right here at the district. I started in like 2004 or 5 being a sub, and I'm still going today, so I'm still here. So I wrote a couple things down because I get nervous, so sorry. When I was younger, the only thing I ever wanted to do was have a catering business. I love to cook and I love to feed people. And I used to think, oh, that never happened to me in my life. But I feel like that these students are my catering business. And I really want to make sure they have a good and healthy meal every day. So that's the way I look at it. And I know that I have a passion for feeding the kids and a strong belief that good food is essential for good learning. And so I'm going to strive to continue in trying to make the program better and keep doing the things that are working and looking for new ways to innovate and maybe do things different. Since I started this position, I've just been trying to learn my new responsibilities and getting to know my staff and all of the people that I work with every day here at the school district, at the district office, and I'm so thankful for them and for all the help they've given me and the support that they give me every day. And I'm also thankful for Kathy. She still helps me. I have her on speed dial like every single day, so I'm thankful for Kathy too. So the things that I want to work on is I want to start observing the operations and identifying where we're doing well and where we can grow. And I will do my best to make the program the best it can be. And I know I have a lot to learn, but I also know where I've come from And that's where I feel like I can be a really good help to all of my staff, because I've been there, I've done everything that they've done, and I've succeeded in schools where I've been, and so I know I can help them out a lot too. So anyways, do you have any questions for me?
Other than you're awesome, Renee. I loved working with you.
Oh, thank you.
You were incredible when I worked with you, so I can't imagine it changing at all.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. Thank you for your time.
Thank you
for your coming.
Yep.
We don't have any public comment today, so moving right along, we'll go to items from the board.
There's lots on there, mostly just calendaring items, kind of trying to catch the board up with upcoming professional development conferences, various dates. Any questions on, I'll explain number 6, but any questions on those other dates? I think Chris has reached out to y'all on the Snow College Benefit Dinner. We're ready to RSVP on that. We've tried to support that every year for the last probably 5 years. We see the NSBA annual conference coming up. When do we need to get things booked?
We'll start looking next month.
Next month, mm-hmm. So maybe a tentative. Is everyone likely planning to attend that? We can work through, let Krista know. Same thing with the USBA conference in Salt Lake City. Just mostly dates to get on your calendars. The USBA fall meeting is going to be here before we know it, September 30th. I know Krista's been in touch with you on all of those. Any questions on those before I jump into item 6? Item 6 is our evaluation. So it's the evaluation of myself and Chad Lloyd. They come around every September where you fill those out. They are very rigorous. There's, wow, it seems like 65, 80, I don't know. There's a lot of different components to our evaluations. Krista will be sending those out probably tomorrow. And then that gives you 3 or 4 weeks to evaluate Mr. Lloyd and I. And then Krista gathers those. They're anonymous. But she gathers the data and creates a synopsis of our evaluations, and then in our October meeting, we go in depth and discuss the evaluations. So we're just going to have to remind you and nudge you to take those. It takes quite a bit of time because they're pretty detailed, but there's places for comment and ratings and areas that you want to see Mr. Lloyd and I improve in. It's been a process we've done since I became superintendent, so this is the 14th year, but I'm grateful for it. I like being able to tell the teachers and all the support staff that all of us are evaluated, from my position all the way down, that we are evaluated and coached, and we constantly strive for a culture of feedback and improvement. So it's a good thing, and I would much rather know how the board felt about myself and Mr. Lloyd up front each year than be caught off guard with something that we needed to be addressing and we weren't addressing. So just encourage you to take the time to fill out those, and then we'll have our evaluation discussion in October. Any other questions on that?
Hey, I was going to ask you, how many people did you feed on the back school batch?
I think we were, I don't know, what do you... Right around 500 again.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
5 to 6. Chad counts them all, but I think we missed some because they come in so quick. I don't know. I think he...
Yeah.
It seemed like there was
a lot more than...
There was a lot there.
Yeah.
It was great.
It was a big success.
I thought
people were...
Everybody seemed happy.
And they just kind of hung out and visited.
Yeah.
I thought if they just don't eat and run, they just sit and talk and enjoy the night.
It was a good night.
Yeah.
Well, pizza,
I think we have. over 500, which it's interesting. There's a lot, people's lives are busy. There's lots going on. But I love doing this. It's something I want to keep doing. And every year there's some that can't make it, but others that try it for the first time, and then we see them back the next year. And growing.
But you've got a date that everyone expects now.
Yes.
That whole thing else coming up.
It's great.
I just thought Chad carried the calendar thing so he didn't have to serve.
That's exactly what he does.
He just likes being boss.
You see over the auction. I mean, you get a sheet calendar, you know? That's pretty cool.
Okay. Items from the administration superintendent.
My first item is just a thank you. I find myself thanking you almost every month, but especially these first, as school gets underway, we've had a great start. It's really been quite smooth. We've dealt with a few hurdles and challenges, as we always do, as the school year began, but it's been another great start, and I'm so grateful. I went to superintendent's meeting this last Monday, and I rubbed shoulders with the other 40 superintendents and hear of their struggles, and I am so grateful for our school board and our community and our principals and our teachers. We live in a wonderful place, and I'm grateful that we have such a good school board that is informed and concerned, but also extremely supportive of our staff. So thanks for your support and for all that you do. Second item, just keeping up, this might be on Mike's items as well, but we do our Empowering Parents seminar nights in each of our attendance areas. That'll be coming up. We do those in the fall. It helps us meet a state requirement in several areas. I've listed them on the agenda. But we historically had really good turnout because we've offered prizes and drawings and even fed them pizza with our grant money, and those grants have run dry. So we're a little more concerned about trying to get people out. When you offer food and prizes, we had some really good turnouts, but we're just going to keep advertising and try to get parents to come out. Obviously, we can't. There's no way to force people to come, but we try to pick evenings that are accessible without other things going on, and we target mental health support. And you know, these things I'm about to mention are all covered in that curriculum that we talked about. And that's the part that I think we need to be really clear on with the community. So things like mental health support, suicide prevention, positive behavior supports, climate and culture initiatives, substance abuse prevention, digital citizenship, bullying. There's several areas that we're required to inform parents on and required to provide support to students with. So that'll be coming up. We do those every fall. Discussion items, we already kind of hit on it, but I just wanted to report back and allow you all to provide feedback to us as an administration on Opening Institute, Back to School Bash. It's all been very, very positive. We've fallen into a really great rhythm where Mr. Willis and I really watch for motivational, fun. For Opening Institute, over the last 10 years, we've tried to keep it fun, light, short, where people aren't overwhelmed. And that's how this was. It was fun. We got a lot of compliments. Just people enjoyed laughing and just forgetting all the pressures and stresses of starting school again and just laughing for a couple of hours. I think it's important for me to get up there and remind our entire staff of our vision and mission and what we're trying to accomplish. The importance of relationships, the initiatives we're working on and why. But it's great. And we're also very excited about our Midwinter Institute this year. Again, it'll be highly motivational. It's a lot more instructional. I was talking to the SEA president yesterday about it. We've got a great pattern there where we email the teachers. We ask them what they need. Do they need help and support in classroom engagement? Do they need help and support in the standards, assessment, whatever that might be, whatever variable in their job that they need support, and then we design the conference around what they're telling us they need. So we'll have a great keynote speaker that's motivating, and we're way excited to bring her in. You all saw her at the national conference. But I'm looking forward to that as well. I've heard nothing but positive. I think what Jill was just discussing, the teachers are really starting to be appreciative of the back-to-school bash. I get lots of emails and thank yous. It's something they have grown to enjoy, and they feel appreciated, as well as Opening Institute. So any feedback on tweaks you'd like to see, anything with those two items? My second item on discussion items, very short this month, but just a reminder of our focus with our school principals and instructional coaches on the multiplier effect. It's been so good. You can see my copy. Like, I'm just highlighting the heck out of this thing. It's so, so good. And our principals are doing the same. I've been receiving, they're due on September 15th, so they've been trickling in. The principal goal-setting sheets, the principal self-evaluations, their observation reports, and they're setting goals. It's just so awesome to see. This book is impacting them and influencing their leadership. And they're setting goals specific to it. You can see the quote that I included on the second discussion item. "I begin to wonder," it says, "why are we smart and capable around some people but not others?" And that's what this book talks about, is being the kind of leader that brings out the smarts and the wisdom in every single employee. This last chapter we've been studying is talking about being an investor, just investing in people. And one of the quotes I love, and we have in-depth conversations in principals meeting about this, and we talk about real life scenarios with principals and assistant principals. But this quote says, "Multipliers treat accountability as a trusted obligation, given out clearly, taken for oneself rarely, and taken back only in the most dire of circumstances." So it's teaching us how to, as leaders, extend autonomy. You know, give the teachers the lead. Let them do things their way. But when you give them that, hold them accountable. And then when things start to go wrong, don't take back the accountability. It's a huge error that we're all guilty of. I'm famous for it. When it starts to go south, I'm like, nope, I'm in charge. Here's how we're going to... And that takes away the ability, the learning cycle. So there's some really, really good strategies as far as allowing... And it's interesting for me, as we've studied this, all of these strategies are also excellent in the classroom. Teachers need to give autonomy to students. And the research is very clear. Allowing students to demonstrate their learning in different ways. Almost everything we learn parallels the principal-teacher relationship, the teacher-student relationship, the superintendent-principal relationship. It's been excellent. So just wanted to keep you up to speed. I always try to come back to the vision, mission, and goals and how we're trying to improve our leadership skills. Third item, we just scheduled these today. This has been a heavy lift for Nolan Anderson and I, but we did our first year last year. They're called stay interviews. You might remember me talking a little bit about this. So there's generally about 45 to 55 staff members that we interview one-on-one. So it takes us 5, 6, 7 full days where we take Tammy Anderson with us. She's our innovation specialist. We show up at the South Sevier schools. We show up at the high school first. She'll go in and tap that teacher out of their class, say, "Hey, I'm subbing for you for 15 minutes max." We try to keep it 10, so we're not disrupting the, you know, instruction. She'll go in and take over their class. They'll come and meet with us, and we just give them an opportunity to express, "Hey, what's going well? Where do you need support? Or do you have frustrations? Or are there needs that we're not meeting?" And we interview every teacher at year 2, year 4, and year 6. So there's a cycle that we're going to do this forever. Every teacher that's hired at year 2, year 4, and year 6, we call them stay interviews because our intent is we want them to stay. We want to make sure that we're offering every possible support to our teachers so that they'll stay with us and continue to allow us to invest in them. And then this year will be the first year we've generated a survey. We call it our staff engagement or staff experience survey, where every single staff member, we send them a survey the 1st of October. It's quick and easy. It's nothing like my evaluation that takes you, an hour to read through it. It's quick and easy. It's a 5-minute survey. There's 12 simple questions. Are you feeling supported? Do you have a colleague you can trust? We can analyze that data and find areas to improve. We give ourselves a baseline as to where we are, and then we can see ourselves grow as we allocate resources and energy into the areas that we're struggling in. Another reason I like that survey is sometimes we'll have an employee or two that'll come with, and they'll say, this is a real issue. Everybody feels this way. And now we'll have data to say, well, yeah, you're right. Everybody does feel this way. Or, no, it looks like, if we look at this data, most employees are happy with this, so we need to be careful in an adjustment. Does that make sense? I think it'll be really, really good. And that one will go out to bus drivers, instructional assistants, custodians, every single employee. And we have over 700 employees on payroll. So it's a lot of work, but I think it's a really, really time well spent. We did it last year, and I think more than anything, the employees feel seen and heard. We had several of them that had come to us from other districts and like, this is amazing. I never had the chance to talk to the superintendent and HR director for 15 minutes. I want to tell you how I feel about this or that. I'm frustrated with this. We take notes. We line up the data. Once we have all the data from last year, this year, and our first survey, probably be completed around the end of the year, November, December, I'll bring a report to the board and show you where we're weak, where we're strong, what we're hearing in the interviews. I think one of our goals, I know Mrs. Porter brought it up, and we're still working on ways to improve, but two-way feedback. I think what she was more talking is at the school level. So we're trying to model it at our level and then encourage every principal and instructional coach, assistant principal, do the same thing we're doing. They should be doing those types of interviews with random community members, students, staff members. So we improve our two-way communication and provide opportunities where people aren't threatened. They can be honest in their feedback. So I think it's good. It's a heavy lift. It takes a lot of time, and it's exhausting work, but it's important work. And we're trying to model it to where we can get it out at the school level. One other just quick item. I'll take advantage of my number 4 other. I just wanted to let the board know, with our federal funding, it's been pretty tricky this year. You probably heard in the news, the Trump administration has frozen a lot of federal funds going out to schools in different areas. We have in our Title VI program, which is our Indian funding, Native American funding, we have Thomasia White is our coordinator, and we have federal funds to keep her on the cutting edge. So we wanted to send her to their annual National Indian Association Convention. And it should have been, this out-of-state travel, which I now have complete, should have been in the board agenda today to meet the requirements. But because of the funding and the difficulty there, it didn't make it in the agenda. It will be in there next month. I didn't want to catch you off guard. So you'll approve it officially on next month's agenda, but she will be there when you approve it. So we've approved it. And we try not to make that mistake. We really push to have our employees submit these out-of-state travel requests 2 months in advance as what's required in policy. They are a little easier when it's just an employee traveling. It's much more complex when students are traveling out of state. So we've got to have those in advance. And they're tricky too. And while I'm at it, I'll mention every year our North Sevier High FFA, their range team, range judging, they have a competition coming up in like, I want to say 2 or 3 weeks. And so Mr. Goble's been reaching out saying, hey, make sure the board's kind of aware. I'll try to get it submitted as soon as I know if they qualify to go out of state in Idaho. And I encouraged him today to go ahead and submit a travel for next month's agenda. Even if they don't make it, the board will be ahead and we'll be within policy. So it's a little tricky, but it was a problem. I was talking to, I think, Chad earlier, or maybe it was Mike. We really had a problem where we were doing this like every month. So we really cut back, and I think we're in a pretty good place. When people travel out of state, it's a big deal. So it takes 2 or 3 months to get their approval. So, any questions for me?
I just what, just on the staff engagement, that's the one that you're doing with every staff, right?
Yes, the survey, the quick 5-minute survey, every single staff member. And we're going to have to push. We're going to have the supervisors of those staff members remind them, hey, take it. Take the survey. We need to know how you feel. Mm-hmm. We want to have 100%, which is hard to do, but...
Right. What, and I don't know how you do this or if you've got time, but maybe you could break that down into like a spreadsheet and say, mm-hmm. this many people said this many people...
Yeah, that's what we'll do.
And then give it to all the teachers so they yes. know how everybody else thinks.
Yeah, we'll pull reports together and share out, and honestly, what I like about it, other than the one thing I don't like, is we're surveyed to death already. I mean, we get so many so that's a negative. Survey fatigue is real. But this gives us a baseline. It's short and simple. If they get used to it each year, I really think it gives them a voice. And then, yeah, we need to share with them the results. Hey, here's where we're at.
The reason I say that is if one person thinks this way, but everybody else thinks this way, maybe it makes them think, oh, wait a minute, maybe I'm off base here.
Right.
So,
and if a very large majority feels another way, that tells us, hey, we need to address this. Right. There's an area that we've got to find ways to improve.
Okay.
So, yeah, I agree. It's got to be a transparent process. We need to use the data, good or bad, to improve ourselves.
Right.
So, yep, I think I'm excited. We had intended to give it last year, but we want to do it right, so it took us quite a bit of time to analyze it. There's several, you've heard of the Gallup survey, you hear that on the radio all the time. Gallup has created one that's excellent. We really looked into buying theirs, but it's expensive. It's kind of nice because then you can compare yourself with other school districts across the country, but the price was pretty steep. So we looked at other surveys and we ended up just creating our own, but I really think it's a great place to start just to give ourselves we can measure our growth against ourselves. So, great question. Any other questions for me? That's all I had.
Thank you, Dr. Douglas. Mike, you're up. Bring us home.
I might steal that.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, to start with, just real quick on assessment. I kind of try, about this time each year when we start talking about our data assessment reviews, give you a little bit of some of the tools that we use when we sit down with our administrators in our buildings and then have them do the same thing with their staff and so forth. We generate, I think last month we talked a little bit about some of the charts that we've put together for them to use, but more so in the state does the same thing. It just takes some time usually. That's a lot of data that they have to put together, and so one of the tools is the data gateway that we use. So I was just going to briefly go over a couple of the things on the data gateway that we have available to use when we're counseling administrators and teachers on what's going on in their school and areas of improvement, areas of celebration, so forth. So, just pull up real quick. I'm still logged in. It kicks you out after a few minutes, and you got to keep logging back in. But on that first, let me go back to there. So it gives you a list of different assessments. Under accountability, it's got several things, including the school report card, which is no longer a letter grade, but I'll get into that here in just a minute. But just briefly, I don't want to spend a ton of time because there's so much information. But for instance, if I want to look at one of our schools, we go to compare schools. It's not quite updated for this last year, the end of this last year. So I'm using 24 data, so I just want to kind of show you what tools are there, not necessarily what's there from this last go-round, but just so that you're aware of some of the things. We sit down with these principals and we go in. We want to put our district in. And then I can choose a school. This particular Compare Schools is talking about percent proficient, so if I just choose transfer middle, you can see, if you'll remember when I brought this up last year, I was talking a little bit about if it'll take 20 schools and compare 20 schools that are within reasonably within a certain demographic, size-wise, sometimes rural to urban and those types of things, but it will take the scores, and because we do have, this is 24 data, we do have the language arts. We won't get that for this last year until August or October, mid-October, October 15th or so. But you can see how if this is South River Middle School, percent proficient, go across the board. At the top, this is right here, shows South River Middle. Language arts, where she scored there, 53. Math was 46.1, and science, 68, I believe. They did really well in science. And so with that, that's going to blur out me. Just jump back and forth. Maybe that'll clear it. There we go. You can see if the other schools listed in the graph are gray, that means that our school at the top was higher percentage-wise than all those other schools. If it's orange, it shows a school that did better. So we could compare both how we compete with other districts, other schools, but also with schools that are doing a little bit better in certain categories. But to see that much gray under, and I did specifically choose South Sevier Middle, partially because I was there before I came here, but also they score really well. And their scores actually on this year with math and science so far was even higher. But going back to 24, it just gives you a really good idea of where, if I was still at South Sevier Middle School, I'd look at that and feel pretty good about life right now because of all the gray there. I would still, because I'm competitive, I'd still look at these and say, why are these schools in these subjects a little bit higher than me? What are they doing? And if it was within reason, I would probably maybe even look into what they're doing to see what I could add to my repertoire of tools and so forth. But that's what we're trying to encourage principals to do, is to find that competitive nature and try and push their teachers in a positive way. Not in a micromanaging way, but in a positive way to try and encourage and pump them up a little bit to do better all the time. And that's one of the big things. Now, on the flip side of that, if you have a school like South Sevier Middle that did well in all three subjects like this, you can go up here and jockey back and forth between proficiency scores and growth scores. So if I drop down to the MGP, which is our growth, median growth score percentile, you see there's still a lot of gray, especially in science, which means that school grew as well as scored highly proficient, which is sometimes a hard thing to do. Sometimes you have either or, but on occasion you have one that really just knocks it out of the park, and so there's a lot. I would look at this chart and I would say, okay, there's quite a bit of orange. I would focus on math. What are we doing in math, or what can we be doing in math comparatively to do a little bit better that way? And so that's just one example of Compare Schools. If I go back to the Data Gateway, talks about different assessments, ACT, Utah Aspire Plus, Acadience. All these things are just measures of accountability. If I drop down to school report card, it gives me an overall. I go back into our district here, and I choose a school. Go, I don't know, Richfield High School would be good. And then it gives me a tag on their scores, typical on achievement, but look how much they grew, exemplary on growth, way high in math and in science. So there's always things that you can work, by using this data, it gives us a platform to go into that school, to go to those administrators and say, okay, tell me about this area. Why only typical in achievement? What can we do better there? But on your growth, let's celebrate some of your growth scores and so forth. Post-secondary readiness, this is only in secondary, or at least at the high school level. And then it breaks down demographics. You can go in here to the profile of the school. It kind of tells you school size, student size, you know, 90% Caucasian. It talks about your percentage of economically disadvantaged, which at Richfield High, not this year, but last year, was 39%. And you kind of get an idea of where each of these schools sit when it comes to intergenerational poverty, you know, your ethnic groups and so forth, and kind of any challenges that might exist from some of those demographic pieces. But it just has a ton of information. We're trying all the time to get our principals to use this information more and more to guide the instruction within the classrooms. And so it's a really good platform. I just wish they were a little bit more efficient when it comes to getting the scores out a little sooner. That's the only hang up I have with it. Once it's there, it's great. I do a lot of behind the scenes gathering that information on my own. I get laughed at by people in the office because I use tally marks on an old notepad, but they use some sort of other form to get the information. But mine, I get a lot faster than them, so I'm okay with that.
I just wanted to say it's so, so important. We spend a lot of our time holding ourselves accountable and talking about data. This is Mike's number one priority, is assessment curriculum, and he's doing an excellent job. I don't thank Mike enough. In our principals meeting, our principals meetings are so much more effective now than they used to be, where they would be 6-hour, torturous, just sit and get. You know, now we email them out in advance. The principal and the coach analyze them and report back that they've read the agenda, and then we spend our time talking about strategy and learning together and sharing examples of success and what's really working. And then Mike follows up and spends hours out in the schools visiting with principals, analyzing the data, holding ourselves accountable. He's made another commitment again this year to even attend more PLC meetings. He started to attend those, and he can see and feel right away where a school is, you know, in their PLC meeting. If they're talking about data and the principal's engaged and the instructional coach is engaged, you can see that school is on a trajectory for success. When we analyze this data, I always remind everyone that it's assessment data is just one seat at a very large table, but it's a super, super important seat. It needs to have a loud voice. And I get a little frustrated because I feel like Sevier School District is the best school district in the state and in the country. I can't find better principals. I can't find better teachers. But sometimes our data slips below. You know, there was a report we discussed in principals meeting for a long time. It was the third grade reading report. All the research is very clear that if students are reading on grade level in third grade, it sets them on a trajectory for success. And our data looked great. You know, we had climbed, the percentage had improved 3 years ago, last year, this year. But there were still a few school districts that were ahead of us, and I thought, how on earth? We've got to reanalyze. We've got to dig into the data. Like Mike says, get a little bit competitive. Another data source that's frustrating to me is we typically, for as long as I've been in the district, so 27 years, we typically, as a district, are about between a half and a percentage point below the state average on ACT. And it just baffles me, because I would put our teachers and principals and schools up against any in the state. And we had that discussion yesterday. I had an in-depth discussion with the SEA president, and we both agree it has a lot to do with student motivation, and teacher ownership, and the ability for teachers to assess their students. I always remind all of us that we can't teach and hope. We can't just teach all year and then hope they do well on the test. We have to begin with the end in mind and figure out how assessments are measuring learning and align our teaching to the standards so that we're not misteaching. You know, it's hard. I've taught. As a superintendent, I have my passions. If you watch me in principal's meeting, there's certain things I like to talk about and certain things I don't like to talk about. So it's a matter of really digging into the data, holding ourselves accountable, and constantly striving for improvement, which it's hard. That's one thing in public ed. We're never going to arrive. We're never going to say, help, we've done our job, pat ourselves on the back. There's always things we can do to improve. Our data looks pretty good. Generally, it's outstanding, but sometimes there's areas we've really got to address. And Mike does it. He does a great job with assessment curriculum, and that he wears a lot of hats, but those two hats are his most important hats by far.
Well, I appreciate that. I will say, I know Superintendent talks a lot about the fact that a student won't learn from you if they don't like you, if they are frustrated. It comes out in the assessment a lot of the times, and one of the things that I've always said about assessment is, if you can get kids to give an honest try on the test, generally you're gonna see those scores go up, and part of that is building those relationships within the building, within the classroom, and so forth. Because if a kid feels good about where they're at and they're there for the right reasons, I used to say, hey, I need you to give me your best effort, and a lot of times I had those relationships in place, and the kids would. But it's more so, if you're not going to do it for you, do it for me. At least you get this, couple hour test. Let's just, give your very best effort, and a lot of times it reflects. And that's what we're trying to do, is get them to break down that data and have that understanding, and then find those little areas that they can motivate kids to give that honest try, because it really does make a huge difference. So, moving on down, as far as I've still got our ACT dates listed there, Utah Aspire Plus, working on our calendar and so forth for the year. But moving down to curriculum, I want to talk a little bit about, this is something that Brandon Harrison over at CUES has put together, and we went out, we talked to each principal. It's like it's already been mentioned, we didn't want one more thing, but CUES has put together this artificial intelligence professional development. Whether we want it or not, it's here, and it's growing. It's getting bigger all the time. So we really want a little better understanding within our buildings of what that looks like. And so CUES, and we rely heavily on CUES. They're awesome. They do a lot of good things for us, and we benefit from their efforts. And so this is just another thing in line. So asking all the principals to find one or two teachers in their building. This is a year-long adventure. And they will do a book study, and it'll be an electronic book that they'll CUES will take care of and get it to them, and then they will have a few short meetings throughout the year where they'll come together and talk about best practices, what they found out, what's working, what's not with AI, so that they could take those one or two teachers in each building can take that information and present in faculty meetings and have just a little AI piece that they can cover with the faculties. And so as a district, hopefully this will help cover that basis a little bit better. And I know we're working in that direction in a lot of different avenues, but this is just one more area that we can hopefully get the right information to the right people, and they can pass it around, and we're better for it when it comes to AI moving forward in our district. The next item I have there is Botvin Life Skills. It's something we've been doing for several years. Botvin started as a tobacco awareness save in health class type of course, but they added some life skills in that curriculum as well. It's mandated by the state that we instruct that in. So you have your option. If you're at the elementary, you can have a teacher teach it in fourth or fifth grade. So we buy the curriculum for that. We go to the middle school, it has to be taught in either 7th or 8th grade. Go to the high school, it's got to be taught in either 9th or 10th grade. And so we give them the materials. The health teacher usually is the one that teaches that. But they spend a little bit of time, kind of like what the superintendent talked about earlier, and what Shiloh was here for. But just another avenue to talk about some of the dangers of some things that are out there, and just making good choices. We try and give them all the tools necessary so they can make those choices for themselves. And they don't always make the right choices, but at least they have the information. They know what's at risk as well. Moving down to the master's reimbursement program, our committee here at the district office met yesterday. We had more applicants this year than we've ever had. a lot more. We actually had 18 applicants for the master's reimbursement program, which is the biggest group we've ever had. I'm not sure whether it's because I had Lisa talk more about it at Opening Institute, and she's better to look at than me, so I'm sure that the message got out there to the right people, because we had a lot of people that applied for that. We whittled it down. It was a tough decision, but went around yesterday afternoon and this morning and awarded those 6 scholarships, basically, to teachers in our district that are looking to add to their toolbox with their master's degree. And so, and that's always fun. You get to play a little bit of Santa Claus there, because they're so excited when you offer them. I mean, when you really look at it, if they take the full 3 years to go through it, and as per IRS regulations, you're talking $5,280 is what we legally can reimburse per year. You're looking at over $15,000 that they just got a gift for $15,000 towards improving their lives and improving the lives of our students. Yes, Ms. Trance.
Are you, if there was 18 that applied, are you saying go ahead and get your education? If you don't get this time, reapply next year?
Yes.
And
we
can reimburse them from the previous year?
No, it has to be when they're awarded. They have 3 years, and it would start January 1. So 26,
well,
27.
Well, I couldn't go in and start my master's degree and then be accepted the second year I was into it and get reimbursed for my first year?
No, but you would get, wherever you start then, you can be reimbursed. And we have some people do that. Understand this. One of the selling points when we're awarding this, I say, some of them are doing it, depending on which institution they choose, they're doing it within a year. They'll hurry through it. They, in that year, because they're piling on credits, sometimes it might cost them more than what we can reimburse. And
yeah.
So they have to pay the difference on top of that, but they're also, because they get a lane change and bump in pay,
yeah,
so it kind of comes out in the wash.
Better. But I
see what you're saying, and but as per our regulations, they have to be in our program during that. They have to be accepted in that to be reimbursed. So some of them might even apply after they've done their own applying and were accepted to an institution, and they might have a year under their belt, and then they apply the next year, and we would start right then when they're accepted and start paying for whatever receipts they bring in from that point. But we only do those 6 a year. That's all that's all we have the money for, is to do those 6 a year. But if you think about it, on any given year, really, it's a 3-year cycle, so really we'd have up to 18 in the program at the same time if they continue. But a lot of them are getting done.
Well, I don't think a lot of them think them through, where if you take 6 this year, mm-hmm. you're going to have that 6, plus you're going to add 6 more.
Yeah.
And that's, I don't think, if they don't get I just looked at different ways that can be applied, and hopefully everybody's happy.
Well, the thing that we do, part of the criteria when they do apply, if they don't get in this year, we highly encourage them to apply next year, because you get credit towards applying the year previous. So I don't think we've had one person that's gone more than over 1 year without being put into the program.
Good.
So now this year might be different, where we had 18. We never had that many. So. But we'll try and get them in as soon as possible, because they do get credit for the years that they apply if they didn't get it. But it's a really good thing. I don't know of any other district in the state of Utah, so just a big thank you to you. It's really benefited our district and benefited the students of this district to have teachers going back to school and working on the master's degree, and they come back with skills that they otherwise wouldn't have. So it's been a really good program. Moving down the line there,
do you see a day where the trust lands money will ever be
used towards that?
help them to help districts get better teachers?
No, I don't. I think it'll I mean, we have to be super careful how we use those trust line funds, and the statute is very clear that it's for the greatest academic need. So if a district, I don't know, it's a slippery slope. If a district started spending those funds directly on, like, teacher master's degrees or something, you know, it's a slippery slope. The legislature loves to look at that and say, oh, yeah, let's just use trust lines to fund public ed. It's really a complex thing. That said, they already can use most, I would say, 85-90% of our trust line funds are used for staff. So schools are now hiring teachers directly using those funds, because that is the greatest academic need. But we constantly have to remind the legislature, Utah isn't number two in the country in education because of funding. It's trust lands are the innovation and intervention funds that give us that opportunity. So if the scare is a bait and switch where they'll take trust lands and use it to fund what they should be funding. As soon as they do that, we lose our innovation money and our intervention money. So it could be used probably for that already if the district aligned that with the greatest academic need. But that would be a dangerous move politically with those funds. One frustration that I was going to let the board know of, that so far so good, we decided to keep funding this program, but last year there was a law that was passed where the funds we used to receive for teachers' level of degree went away. So we no longer receive extra funds for the percentage of teachers. So you'd get a little bit of a kickback from the state if they had a master's degree, a master's plus 30, a doctorate degree. Now they took that away. So it made it hard to continue with this program. But we believe in it. We want to continue to offer it. It's a great recruiting tool. I don't know if there's a district in the state that offers it. And I love to tell people, hey, we offer this. I think it makes, it doesn't, it's, I don't know if it's like a game changer as to where someone wants to live, per se, but it sure is a feather in our cap that we offer it.
Well, it's the best tool that we have to get the kind of teachers we want.
Yeah. And I think that's where we're, you know, on kind of the upper shelf there, because I know in a lot of the bigger districts, they would just as soon hire somebody right out of college and get the 5-6 year people, 10 year people out of the program, cost them too much.
This is kind of a double whammy, because we pay our teachers. As you look at payroll studies and things we've done, we pay very well to teachers who have a master's degree or a master's plus 4 years of experience, and now we don't receive the extra funds that helped us pay them well. So it is it's potentially scaring us, but we're committed. We're going to hold the course. Mr. Lloyd and I and Mr. Willis are having lots of discussions about it. But the six, to me, it's money extremely well spent. Generally, we can, even this year, so there were 12 or whatever, 11, 12 that didn't get the scholarship. If they'll just stay with us, they'll likely get it next year or the next. You know, of those that applied, a lot of them are brand new teachers. That's great. If we have the slots, we'll award it, but it is actually a little better to let them get their feet under them before they tackle a master's degree. So the six is kind of a sweet spot. It's working.
Well, it's an investment on our part, and to speak to what you're saying, Coach, I know districts up north that will hire new teachers to fill positions as an internship, paying them 5/8 or whatever of a beginning year salary. They'll do that, and then they'll have to reapply the next year, and they'll replace them with the next group of interns just to save money. And here we are, we're investing in our teachers, not only staying grounded, because there is a 3-year commitment once they've accepted this, right? They have to stay at least 3 years in our district. But they also are improving their skills and knowledge to take back to the classroom. So we feel like it's a great investment, and it will benefit us in the long run. So in comparison, it's not all about the dollars. It's sometimes about the kids that way. My last item here is one of the hats I wear. I'm over driver's ed in the district, and so I talk about different aspects. One of the things is the zero fatalities. This website, if you didn't have a chance to go through it, it has so much information, so many moving parts, just good stuff. If you look down here, they've got, you know, different parts of the driving experience. From the pre-driver, it says 12 to 14 years, to the ready for a learner permit, to ready for a driver's license, parent night, and that's, I'll talk a little bit about that, and then all drivers, and we could all benefit from this. I know I'm not the greatest driver, but I will say, looking at some of these videos, I want to be a better driver after watching some of the videos, but, I mean, if you click on any of these, it opens up another whole other thing. There's videos involved. There's, I mean, all sorts of great stuff. But if I was a parent of a student that was, to this point, ready to start driving and so forth, I would go through this website every night with them and watch all the videos and have the dialogue and the conversation. I know our driver's ed teachers work really hard to keep us, you know, keep those kids going through. As a matter of fact, a few years ago, if you'll remember, we were struggling because we had three or four of them quit at the same time, and it takes 6 to 9 months to get them through the course so that they could actually teach the course. It was not good. COVID hit. It was a nightmare. But since then, we've done a really good job of keeping people in place in these positions to not only instruct but also to drive our students and so forth, putting together Canvas courses, hybrid courses. But this website is just outstanding. The more I dive into this, the more I'm like, wow. You know, and that is the goal, right? Zero fatalities. We talk in our district about one of our goals. We relate it to this is zero Fs. You know, we want kids to be successful and so forth. Will it ever get there? Yeah, that's a stretch, but same thing here. You see the numbers decline minimally some years, but they seem to decline over time and so forth. And so it's just really, really good information. If you ever want to just kind of catch up on what's going on in the world of driving and stuff. I noticed, I can't remember which one it was on, maybe the drivers, it has little tutorials on just refresher courses on what to look out for when you're driving and so forth. But just a great website the state has done to put together to help try and keep our kids safe and keep all of us safe on the road. So just one more aspect of the whole thing. So we do have a lot of, you know, those students we have, we teach a lot of kids driver's training and get them in the cars, and that's just part of the school experience. Any questions for me? I think that's all I have. By the way, I do have the parent nights listed there for the zero fatalities parent nights. Requiring that the student comes with their parent and attends one of these, and these are just the ones in our district that I have listed. But if I went back to the website, I could pull up. There's hundreds of dates throughout the different locations and dates at different schools throughout the whole state of Utah that if they couldn't make one of these, they have their pick of wherever they want to go. And as long as they do that, they can't be signed off with a driver's license until they've attended with their parent. So it's really good stuff. Okay, thank you.
Okay, so I'm giving it. Thank you, Mr. Wallace. I do have a question. I'm a little embarrassed that I don't really answer this, but do our elementary middle school students still receive report cards? Is that old news? Old school. Do we do report cards?
Middle school, yes.
Middle school does. They have, like, they have progress reports, and then, like, when they do parent conferences, they have a lot of stuff to talk about, but not necessarily a report card at the elementary level.
Elementary doesn't, but
middle and high school.
They cost me money every year.
Back to the ice cream cones.
Okay, that's right.
Thank you, Mr. Wallace.
And you know, the elementary, that's a great question. I really like, they have student-driven reports. So when we have our parent-teacher night, you know, SEOP, where parents come in with their students, they actually, I think all of our elementaries have adopted it, to where they ask the student to demonstrate to their parent where they are in their learning, and they share it. It's a very engaging process. Probably address it as well as anybody. It is a report card. It's just not the typical middle high school grade report card. That's how I went through that.
Yeah, it is. You just sit down and go through it. It's student driven, and they just take their parents through what they're learning and how they're doing, and it adds more accountability to the student.
Action items to deal with. I don't have a closed meeting, so I think we don't have anything left to cover. I would entertain that. Is there any discussion or any questions from the board? I'd entertain a motion to adjourn.
I'll second motion. I'll make the motion.
Second. Thank you. It's been seconded and moved. We adjourn. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries. We are adjourned.